Welcome to the Black History Toolkit podcast with Abu Bakr Madan Al-Shabazz. Support the channel by subscribing and also making a donation via Patreon or buy a cup of coffee on Ko-fi. See the links below. You can also find out more by visiting the website abubakrmadan.me.
So what we're going to do, we're going to look at abolition and emancipation. It's going to be a bit all over the place, but I wanted to understand the resistant movements from approximately 1807 to 1865. 1807 is when they passed the Abolition of the Slave Trade Act, not slavery. So when they passed the slave trade, it was to stop trading Africans in the New World. They still kept slavery. Slavery ended, so-called, in the Caribbean islands, approximately 1833, 1834. Let's have a look at some of these things, what takes place in Britain. So you've got the likes of William Wilberforce. Most of you know he's the MP of Hull. He's part of the abolition movement. He's against the slave trade, but not slavery. Let's get something thing, because people confuse the slave trade and think slave trade and slavery is one of the same. No. Slave trade is a forced migration of black people from Africa to the New World, whether it was the Caribbean islands, North America, or even Britain. This is what it was. Slave system or slavery was the physical system of exploitation, social degradation within the Caribbean islands. So there's a difference. So he was against the slave trade, not slavery. Because there was a person in his country by the name of Thomas Clarkson, who is really the real hero. Thomas Clarkson was the one who was going to the ports of Liverpool, Bristol, and he was seeing the conditions in which black people were coming in. He was totally disgusted. He was writing this thing down, giving it to Wilberforce, who was like the front man, to argue these things out in Parliament. I don't even think that Wilberforce ever saw the conditions of black people who came into London or Bristol or Liverpool. I don't think he actually saw it with himself. I think he actually smelt the air, etc., the stench, but I don't think he actually saw with his own eyes. It was all documented evidence that came from Thomas Clarkson himself. Wilberforce was also opposed to the Haitian Revolution. So he believed in the ballot, not the bullet, that we have to wait for good white folks in Britain to make those changes to make our lives better, rather than us rising up and making those changes ourselves, a bit of agency to bring about autonomy. He was totally against the Haitian Revolution. So it's clear he was not really, he was supporting the slave system to some extent. How can you be against a revolution for change? And you're supposed to be arguing for that same change in Parliament. It couldn't have been. His focus was on the slave trade, the conditions that they were coming in, not slavery. White abolitionists saw slaves as humans, but not their equals. And this is important. Not all the abolitionists, okay, they had some sort of thing where they actually started seeing us as humans. We're not animals and we're not chattel or cattle or whatever the case may be. So we're humans now, but we're not their equals. And this is what exists in the 21st century. Even though we're seen as humans, we're not seen as the average equal within Western society, whether it's Britain or America. So this is where this tradition's understanding comes from. So he ended up addressing Parliament to end slave trading and trade with Africa instead as commercial partners. So that's a good thing that Wilberforce does. Let's give him credit where credit is due. He's, you know, let's stop the trade. Let's stop exploiting the resources, the minerals, the commodities, and all that merchandise that's coming out of Africa. It's their commodities, resources, minerals. Let's trade with them directly. This is what he's basically saying. But we know what takes place in the 1880s at the Berlin Conference, where all those European nations come together for the so-called scramble for Africa. We know how that comes about and the reason why that comes about. So Wilberforce, give credit where credit is due. He was against our freedom when it was coming from bottom up. He believed in the top down, but we had to wait. It was a slow process. You've got to argue, you know, the ballot. No, the bullets. That is the way. Because that is what America did. When America signed the Declaration of Independence in 1776, and they kicked the British out, etc. They didn't get the respect that they deserved from European nations. The first nation to accept America's independence approximately 2 to 3 years later, Morocco, okay, was a Muslim country that accepted America's Declaration of Independence. So it is clear that the Europeans stood against that, against America as a sovereign nation, state, etc., within the so-called Western world now. So here is just an image. I am not a man and a brother, because the amount of people who were illiterate in this country couldn't read. So they have to read that, because the abolition movement now is trying to bring to the attention of the average person on the street, the average citizen in Britain, what is really happening. These people have been dehumanized, especially the men, because it was at the time where women weren't really part of the discourse. Okay, so we got to go back to the time of why this is what it is. So I am not a man and a brother. In other words, I have a family, trying to appeal to the spiritual and religious affiliation of the British people or the British public, and to bring back his humanity in the sense that he is a man, not an animal. Okay, he should be chained up and controlled. And then we got the likes of Orlando Equiano, who wrote a fantastic book about his voyage, about his journey. He was stolen from Nigeria by the British, put on a slave ship as a young boy with his sister. His sister ended up going to one place and he ended up going to another. And this was a common scenario in the Middle Passage. Sometimes they would take complete families. Then they were taken to a Spanish port, to a Dutch port, to an English port, and they were separated. This is why in our community, the African Caribbeans and the African Americans, the thing that we call ourselves is brothers and sisters, because that person might be. You might have, your great-great-grandfather might have been the brother of my great-great-grandmother. This is why we do that, you know? So it's not from a religious perspective. When we say, oh, brothers, in America, they say brothers, I mean, because you could be related to one another. This is how this idea of thing comes out. And the other thing is, why do in the Caribbean community and in the American community, when we finish off a sentence, we always say man. Man, 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 because we were called boys during servitude. And we are reinforcing this thing as a man because we were never allowed to be a man. What's happening, man? You know, come on, man, etc., etc. This is what it comes out. So our linguistic expressions, it actually associates itself with the conditions we come from and what we're trying to replace in order to reinforce a strong identity for ourselves. And that's why we say it. You know, even black women, we say sisters. They don't necessarily mean my blood sister. They mean that woman over there who happens to have the same skin color as me, we might be sisters because her great-great-grandmother may be related to my great-great-great-grandmother, who were taken onto slave ships and they were brought to different places. And this is how the Pan-African movement comes into being. With the scattered or the diasporan black populations outside the African continent. So you can see how all these things are culminating in together to unite us. And Marcus Garvey, who came at the beginning, literally at the beginning of the 20th century, is going to solidify and synthesize all this together by creating the largest mass movement ever in history between what they, some say 30 million. Some say 6 million, some say 9 million, in all different, at all different chapters, all around different countries around the world. And then when independence came into the African continent from the 1950s and 60s, you always hear the slogans of Marcus Garvey. His books was read, the philosophies and opinions of Marcus Garvey. Nkrumah of Ghana read his book, and then he became the leader. Kenneth Kaunda was another person who read his books. The ANC as well read his books, and they solidified and became a movement at the turn of the 20th century, when the British literally pulled out and allowed the Trekkerboers, who now call themselves Afrikaners, to steal the country and to give black people so-called townships and pariah group status. This is Thomas Clarkson, Thomas Clarkson is really the hero for the abolition movement, really. He was the one who was going around collecting information and giving it to Wilberforce. Unfortunately, you hear more about Wilberforce than you do about Thomas Clarkson, but you've got to give this man credit. This man went traveling. He used his own money to travel to London, to Bristol, to Liverpool, and to see the conditions, and to get black people who were already in Britain, who were slaves, who spoke those local tongues and languages, to speak to these slaves coming off those ships, to talk about the conditions, where they came from. This man documented everything. He's a real hero behind what change that takes place in parliaments. You know, Wilberforce is just a mouthpiece, but this was the person that collected all the information, who, unfortunately, has been written out of history to a large extent. He has. And it's unfortunate that this happens. Even amongst white people, they do this. When somebody contributes something to the state of black people or trying to enlighten people about the true conditions of something, they want to put them on the wayside, on the sideline. And the other thing which I will mention here is that even though he helped the campaign for change, etc., he actually met Henry Christophe. Henry Christophe was one of the revolutionary leaders or commanders in the Haitian Revolution, who actually came and settled in Britain. So when Haiti becomes a nation state, etc., some people decide to move to other countries because things are not well in the country. You start to see that France ends up imposing reparations on Haiti in 1824, 1825. And they take up all this mahogany because the French were just addicted to wooden tables now, mahogany, etc. So, and that is what's caused a lot of these earthquakes in Haiti. That was the reparations they had to pay. And what has happened, all the European nations who were former slave traders have watched Haiti suffer. Because Haiti, how dare you become an independent state, allow your women to vote, kick us out, and think you're going to survive? Every country, America, you know, France, Britain, Spain, Portugal, Italy, Germany, Holland, the Dutch, the Danes, the Swedes, all those countries have collaborated together to ensure that Haiti stays poor. There's a deliberate attempt to starve those people. How dare you gain freedom from us? This is why Haiti is in the situation it is today. We need to read the history and understand it. They're collaborating because these are old wounds which they want to maintain some control over. So Haiti is a problem. You even know what's taking place where Haitians have tried to sail to America and many of them are drowning in the sea. And yet people who come not too far from Haiti, is Cuba, can actually go there and step in. It's about the color of the skin. And not just that, it's about what these people did. What these people did was terrible. How dare you defeat the greatest armies of the time, Spain, Britain, and France, and then gain independence. We're gonna bleed you dry. And we've seen this taking place. So now you understand why Haiti is in the state it is, because Haiti is supposed to be a healthy country. It should be wealthy. They starved it to death. Because if the French economy fell because of Haiti, and then the Louisiana Purchase has to come in, where France and Napoleon has got to send to sell the states of Louisiana and Mississippi to the Anglo-Americans, which is bolstering the French economy, why can't internally Haiti's resources bolster up its economy? And it is because there's been a deliberate attempt since 1804 to starve that country into submission. That is the reason why that is happening. And that is the reason why if you go to most of the Caribbean islands today, you notice that the poorest people in those countries are black people. The wealthiest and the richest people are white people. And they've made sure that they've maintained this. This is no accident. This is being created by design. So the reality of the situation is that these are the remnants of slavery, whereby the old plantocracy are there, merchants are there, the men of profession are there, the hotel, the landlord owners now, the states, and they're owning hotels and the airports and all these other type of things. That's the jobs they do now. Even when I talked about, I think it was last week when I talked about the Bay of Pigs invasion, and because the plantocracy in Cuba, those people that was trying to fight, because when Castro came in, he kicked out America and he kicked out the gangsters, the mafia, he kicked them out, and they were really upset about this. And a lot of the Cubans fled, the landowners fled. Those landowners were working with CIA, FBI, the American government, and the American army were the children and grandchildren of the Cuban planters. They were the grandchildren of the slave owners. So this is what we have to understand about this, just to wrap this up.